How can we get better at changing our footprint? Hi, my name is Marcin Wojciech Żebrowski, and this is the newest episode of Urbcast, my podcast about urbanism, architecture, cities, and many more. And today I have a great pleasure of talking about something that is very exciting because Henning Larsen, the company that I'm part of, has just opened the exhibition called Changing Our Footprint in the Danish Architecture Center in the heart of Copenhagen. The exhibition is actually the third exhibition we have opened this year. Two of them were first in Berlin and then in Hamburg. And now we are bringing our approach to sustainability and materials, biodiversity, to the heart of the Danish design to Copenhagen. The Changing Our Footprint exhibition is about scalable solutions to reduce the substantial carbon footprint of the construction industry and also addressing the industry's environmental impact. And today I'm talking to Eva Raumbo, who is the country market director in Denmark at Henning Larsen. And she was one of the people responsible and committed to the exhibition. We talk about Henning Larsen's legacy and how can this new form of displaying our work contribute to broadening the outreach and the scope of our work. How is it different to build a building and organize an exhibition? How can one work with crafting and tailoring the exhibition message so that it is attractive to both practitioners, but also people who are not familiar with architecture? And definitely there will be many of those coming to the Danish Architecture Center and seeing the exhibition. We talk about this scaling up theme in architecture, the very important element of this exhibition, which is about testing the smaller solutions, but having this ambition of scaling them up and changing the status quo of the industry. And last but not least, we will talk about the responsibility and open source in architecture. So why a company like Henning Larsen is very willing to share the knowledge, the data that we have gathered, and why is it a very beneficial thing to the whole of the industry. First of all, welcome to the conversation with Eva. And second of all, remember that the Changing Our Footprint exhibition is now available in the Danish Architecture Center and will be there until the 3rd of March. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm very happy that you found some time because this week has been extremely busy for you, but not only this week, but a lot of previous weeks as well.
I think, most of my weeks are very busy, but it's been extraordinarily busy now since we've been putting up the exhibition at the Danish Architecture Center.
And what people now can see in the Danish Architecture Center, it is an exhibition that is not in the main hall, but it is in this kind of stairwell gallery. It's not very big, but still it took a lot of time to put it together. Mm. And that's something that I would like to talk about today. So how do you feel? The big opening of the exhibition took place yesterday.
It took place, so I'm a bit rusty today, but I'm also left with a very happy feeling of it being a relevant, you can say, opinion or voice in a larger debate that we're having very much in the Danish context.
I think that Denmark is very lucky to have a very, very strong platform for the debate. Mm-hmm. And a lot of architecture companies, they raise the voice and then try to fight for a bit more sustainable direction in architecture. And here I would like to focus on Henning Larsen's legacy, because I think that this interesting part of Henning Larsen is that it is a studio that has over 65 years of legacy. Yeah. And while we prepared ourselves for this conversation, you said that there is this very big need for reinventing the office.
Yeah, I think it's, if not reinventing, then at least staying relevant. And I think it's about looking forward rather than always looking backward. And I think the only way to really stay relevant, being a studio of 65 years of age, is that we've been able throughout the years to risk and test new things and dare to fail as well, but somehow never sticking to what we know is working, because the world is always turning, you can say, and in some sort of a movement. And I think what is very much defining what Henning Larsen is today was the fact that we introduced around 15 years ago to work very research-based, onboarding PhDs, engineers, and being able to, at first, work very much around how could we optimize our design around microclimate and daylight and so forth. But now you can say our research is going very much into the, on one hand, the urban scale, and on the other hand, into the almost one-to-one material understanding how is it we develop an architectural language also around building with a new palette of primarily biogene materials when we do build new buildings.
And that's something we're going to discuss in a moment, so how to scale those up. But before that, I'm just curious, what are your thoughts about, because you've been in the office for quite a long time now, so I assume you've also experienced the time that Henning Larsen, the founder himself, was here around the studio, and he was perceived as this master of light. So that was this brand attached to the office. And while you try to follow the world and also attract new talents, attract new projects, how can you keep this balance between what was already done and what was already established in terms of the brand, but also follow through and adding those new layers of sustainability and materials and so on?
I think when I joined the office back in 2006, and I was a very young architect, I only had, I think, 1 year of experience beforehand. And it was a little bit the crazy zeros in terms of that everything had to sort of have funny shapes and being very expressive architecture, and or at least this sort of that every studio, sort of global studios, they were very serious about having some sort of a signature so you could read that it was their studio who had done a particular building. You should be able to read it from just looking at, you can say, the shape or the, you know, the look of the building, with Gary and Zaha did and all these people. I'm Kohlhaas as well. And I remember having these discussions back then about sort of why isn't it more obvious whenever we design a Henning Larsen building, aren't we supposed to somehow have that type of signature as well? And I remember the answer also from Henning Larsen himself was that it was about the content. And I think that is also what has kind of what is still driving us. Mm. It's about the content and adding value to what we're doing. So that is very much on the how we practice, you can say. But then I think there's a cultural thing that is also attracting new talent. And you can say also we are fairly good at also keeping our talent in the studio once they're here. But that is that Henning Larsen himself, he had this practice next to being a professor at the academy. Mm. And I think this whole approach of teaching on one hand and practicing here at the studio became very much the one and the same. So the way you can say at the academy, you as a teacher, you don't give the answers. You don't come and kind of draw the sketch and say, this is what it's supposed to look like. You try to ask the relevant questions and bring out the debate and somehow indicating a direction, but never giving the answers yourself. And this is very much how Henning was practicing here at the studio as well. Mm. And I think what I now as a leader of the studio is trying to vocalize as a culture of how we work still.
I wonder what would Henning himself say about the exhibition, because it is a maybe not extremely fresh or new way of talking about architecture, but it is something that really like integrates and showcases what we do and how we do things and how we use the materials. So on that note, I would like to ask, what is like your kind of personal feeling about this exhibition, and how can Henning Larsen use an exhibition or the exhibition now at DAC as a tool? Because of course you can spend months or years on building a building, but you can also reach so many people with such an exhibition.
Yes, and I think first of all, when you are again a company of a certain age, it's very tempting to start with to say now is your chance at Danish Architecture Center to make the big retrospective, sort of showing our development from the beginning and where we are now. And I think already saying this is not what we're going to talk about, we're talking about where we are now and where we are moving towards, is a really bold move. And it's daring. And also the whole approach of saying, well, we test all these things and we know that we are failing in some of them, but it's the only way we learn. So it's a very, you can say, a journey also of curiosity and learning as we try to develop. And I think that is the whole, you can say the theme then of the exhibition is to say, well, first of all, what is it we are testing when we do our research and innovation? And what are we learning from that? And how do we scale it up afterwards? Mm. And that is, in a way, what the exhibition is trying to dwell on, is that we really need to keep scalability in mind when we also do our innovation, because that is ultimately at least one answer on the from the building sector, you can say, of how is it we are dealing with the climate crisis. Hmm.
This is the $1 million, or in that case, million krona question. How do you scale those things up and how can you use it? But how to address it properly? Because I bet there will be many different people visiting DAC, the Danish Exhibition Center, and seeing the exhibition. And what is this? What is the role of the language that is used during the exhibition and also in the work of the studio, so that in that case, it might be equally understood by someone who is an architect, but also by someone who is not familiar with architecture at all?
Well, that is actually what has been super challenging about creating an exhibition for the audience of a Danish Architecture Center that is both school classes and tourists and the kind of everyday Danish sort of person who's who might be interested in architecture. And then, of course, also our colleagues and the collaborators. So it's a very broad, you can say, audience. And of course, we, with the limited space, we've tried to make it simple, but not banal in what we are narrating. But then we support it with the videos, and where there's a more in-depth, you can say, insight into some of the projects. So it's possible to dwell and get a better and more thorough understanding. And then, of course, it's about, you can say, exploring the first intentions and then following up with conversations.
And this is one of the conversations, definitely. I wanted to talk to you because I think the exhibition itself, it is a conversation starter. And I think that it is important to follow up and discuss. What is the content of the exhibition? What one can expect while seeing it, while visiting DAC? Of course, we don't want to disclose too much.
What we decided on was to sort of take three, not the only three, but three major kind of themes that we are very much focusing on as we speak on our projects in the studio. One is biodiversity and how we can improve biodiversity in our landscape projects. Secondly, how is it we work with timber, both in smaller and larger examples. And thirdly, actually looking at you can say, for us at least, a slightly newer material being a straw, both straw on facades, but also as actually a leftover material from the agricultural, you can say, product, where it can be built into, you can say, prefabricated elements, and you use them as walls instead of a concrete piece or something else. What is interesting when we compare numbers is that the straw elements actually perform carbon-wise 8 times better than timber. So, you know, we're really trying to sort of say, what is it? It's not only about, everybody's talking about timber these days, and we can actually do even better. So I would say that the exhibition is also very much a discussion of saying we need a more conscious awareness on how we use materials, and that we use the right ones or the most relevant ones where they are most needed. So it's not saying that we shouldn't use concrete at all, but we should at least use it only where it's most needed. And when there are alternatives, we do that so that it's a much more, you can say, balanced spectrum of materials. And that is, of course, something we really need to engage all, not only clients and investors, but also contractors really to involve in. And I hope this exhibition will help push forward this discussion.
There is one project that is an example of such an approach. And I mean here the Feldberg Skole, which is a school in Denmark. A small school, but built differently. Small school with big impact, one can say. Could you say something more about this case and also how to scale it up?
Feldberg is a project we worked on already some years ago, and it was done and inaugurated maybe a year and a half ago or something. And it's a small extension of a school just north of Aarhus. And what is so ambitious about this little extension, it's 250 square meters, it's tiny. But that is the point that it's done for the first time in Denmark, at least, with these straw elements. And it was very much a part of a PhD, you can say, program we were running at the same time or collaborating in around the material pyramid. And we, you can say, we collaborated with the academy on actually drawing out the material pyramid of what should we use more in our buildings and what should we use less of in this very intuitive, you are what you eat kind of approach. And you can say the Feldballe School came almost as an innovation project, as in the belly of working at the same time with the material pyramid. I mean, we had these extremely engaged young people here in the office, and because there was no money in it, they actually went over there to help, you know, setting up the elements when they came, and they're all prefabricated. So basically the school was done in one day, the main structure was up, you can say. And now it's a, you can say, it's a living laboratory of really being able to go over there and see how is the building reacting to moist, to indoor climate changes and exterior changes and so forth. And we've done some of the details in a way where we can really easily access, you can say, the bottom part of the straw walls, for instance, so you can easily check if there's any damage there and so forth. So we've really tried to, you can say, work in the details, a very proactive way of being able to understand and read the building if anything is wrong. So that was very much a, you can say, one-to-one innovation project that we did. Now we are involved in building a very large logistics center for the client Bestseller in the Netherlands. First of all, it's a super large timber structure that we are doing the logistics center with, but all the facades are planned with the straw elements. And I think very much the reason why we could talk to the client about using this type of material was the fact that we could go to the school and actually show how is it working. They could experience it one-to-one. So the minute you take, you can say, the material away from being something that is only speculated about or someone may have tested somewhere, and this sort of all this risk of going into, you can say, outside your comfort zone, also as a client, you eliminate a lot of that when you're suddenly able to go and visit the school in this case and understand how is it working.
Talking about the scalability, scaling up the theme of the exhibition, what narrative would you use in that case for a client to say that the small building built with straw can be turned into something bigger? Because I can imagine there might be many challenges on the way. So how can you convince a client and say that it is possible or it's worth trying?
I think first of all, once it's there and you can explain how it works, it's not so difficult to scale up in principle. Mm. I mean, of course, if you need to scale something from more than a two-story to, say, 6-8-something-story biogene facade, then you really need to seriously think about how do we deal with fire and so forth. And that is, you can say, some of the learnings we are doing now on other projects. How are we able to scale up this type of, you know, houses that we've actually done for many years and it's been done across Denmark? I mean, it's really not a challenge to build in timber when it comes to a two-story house. It's not complicated fire-wise. When it really becomes difficult, it's when you go beyond. Yeah. And I think we have other projects also at the exhibition, for instance, the Marmormolen going up to 8 floors in timber here in Copenhagen. It was a very big first time for the Copenhagen to sort of accept this. So even when we do scale up, I think there are a lot of, you can say, pioneering in it. But of course, that is the next innovation part, you can say. First of all, we innovate in the small scale, but the next step of innovation is actually when we are able to bring it up to a scale where you talk about a city density or where you are able to, you can say, deliver on some of the many other aspects of having a sustainable city. Mm. That is, of course, that we're able to share square meters and and stack ourselves in flats rather than having a one or two story houses spread out across a more urban sprawl. I mean, that is, I would really say that building a wooden house somewhere on the countryside is not necessarily to be considered a sustainable solution, even though it's done out of timber and probably with a decent carbon profile, because all the complications that comes with living in a more isolated place and you need cars and so forth, it just comes with a different type of behavior that we ideally would like to affect as well with our architecture.
Speaking of architecture and the responsibility of architecture, there is also a new topic on the agenda, which is this whole open source approach to crafting some solutions, some tools that can be shared with other players in the industry or wider audience. And this is an aspect that I would like to explore a bit further, because exhibition is one thing, and the thing that we share the learnings and everyone can see and explore and follow up with the discussion. But we also have tools like very new Open Detail or Geoplan or Unboxing Carbon. How those tools are being developed so that they can help in this open source dialogue, I would say.
Well, I think that is at least another way of talking scalability. And that is that we, as a large office, as one of the very large offices in Denmark, I think it's definitely our responsibility also to share what we learn from. And you can say again, the exhibition is one way of sharing, but we are actually being very open about some of the innovation that we are doing. So the Unboxing Carbon, where you really learn about the carbon profile of building materials, has been done as an open source project. And we've actually done courses with a lot of our colleagues from other studios, so that everybody can learn how to calculate the carbon profile of and do the life cycle analysis on projects. I think a part of you can say one of the benefits of Henning Larsen being foundation owned is that we are able to invest in developing new technologies, and the open source, as you mentioned, is something we are just beginning to develop together with Constructing Architect School. Is really going to be, you can say, example book of details, primary details, but done in bio-based material. So again, really trying to say, how is it we can, how can we somehow be very proactive in saying we don't all need to do the same experiences and mistakes. We can actually share where we are and what we learn, and everybody can contribute to that. Geoplant is another one where we are able to actually make a very large database of the world's different plant species. And you're able to go in and spotlight the site you're working with and saying what would be the relevant plants to bring into a project here, so that you, in the end, are able to calculate your biodiversity, hopefully enriching the site. What we have discovered in some of our projects, both working with the Fælledby here in Copenhagen, but also with the logistics center I was just talking about before, is that even though the built environment is of course, or the buildings themselves, they take, you can say, they occupy some of the land where you could otherwise have nature. But when we compare baseline to our, you can say, plant strategy, we can calculate that going forward, we can actually enrich, not even create a status quo in the landscape, biodiversity-wise, but we can even work with how do we improve even further. So you can say, for us, it's really a discovery of saying that when you take some land, you can say, in order to build, doesn't mean that you cannot somehow improve biodiversity at the same time. So they're not opposite sides, but you can actually make it work together. And this whole approach of saying that we design not only for humans, but we design for all species, and that is a part, again, of our responsibility as designers, is, I think, the only way to go forward. And we like to share that with everyone.
On that last note, as I mentioned to you, Herbcast is, I'm very happy about that. It's a very international podcast. It is listened to in more than, I think at this point, 70 countries. So especially talking to those who are not living in Denmark or are not Danes, where is this willingness to share coming from?
I can't even say it's a particular Danish tradition, but I think it's coming probably from a point of saying that the crisis that we are in, the climate crisis, and the responsibility of the building sector on the carbon outlet is so extreme, then that the only way we can somehow contribute to creating a reduced outlet is not only by fighting from project to project, but it's when we can scale it up. And that also means scale it out to our colleagues, because it's when everybody starts kind of working towards a greener transition in the building sector that it begins to have an impact. So as long as it's just you and me competing of who can make the greenest building, it's nothing. Nothing is won there, you can say. We only win when we actually try to do it, as many of us together.
I'm used to this type of approach because I'm living in Scandinavia for many, many, many years. So it's very natural to me. But I can't not think of a scenario where someone is not willing to share, because why would you share with your competitors who could take it and develop it further and maybe win another project?
Well, I think this is a risk that we are willing to run as the crisis we are facing is larger than anything.
Eva, there is this one more question I wanted to ask you, because when we've been also talking about this idea of having this conversation about the exhibition, we compared building a building to preparing and organizing an exhibition. And you, of course, throughout your career so far, you've been working on many buildings. I don't know about exhibitions. Was it your first that you've been kind of in charge of and working a lot with?
First of all, I wasn't in charge of the exhibition, but there was a big team participating. We've done, you can say, a variation of this exhibition in Berlin and in Hamburg already. But what we've done for the Danish Architecture Center was to curate it slightly different, because I think the questions we're ready to ask here in Denmark are slightly more progressed compared to some of our neighbors. We had the UIA conference in Copenhagen this year, and I think there was really a lot of fine examples of pavilions scattered around Copenhagen this summer, where different architectural studios were really trying to ask questions about how can we build with bio-based materials and also at the same time, you can say, testing a new architectural aesthetics that comes with also using a different material vocabulary. And although they were really fine, nice pavilions, I think they maybe lacked actually the scalability ambition in them. They weren't asking those questions. They were just trying to say, look at what we can do in this scale. I think for me, sort of when we do test and innovate in the small scale, we just need to embed this strategy of how what we're testing here is something that needs to work in a much larger scale. And this is what we need to test, you can say, in the one-to-one study of a pavilion, but knowing that what we learn will have a direct impact on how we can make bring it up to a larger scale. Could be rammed earth, it could be all sorts of materials that was being kind of exemplified in very nice pavilions, but I think they, in a way, they stopped a little bit at that scale, and I think that's a pity, and that's a discussion I would like to bring out. Yeah.
But thank you for bringing it to Herbcast. I really hope that we will reach as many people as possible and pose this question about the scalability and encourage people to think about scalability of their solutions. Usually I would ask my guests to recommend a book, but I think that this time, since our focus is on the exhibition, I would like to ask you to maybe not recommend, because you already recommended the exhibition, but if you could say some facts about the exhibition. So where can we see it? How long can we see it?
You can go to the Danish Architecture Center in the heart of Copenhagen. And the exhibition is in the Stair Gallery, and it runs until the 3rd of March, as I understand.
Yeah. Yes, so there is still a bit of time, especially now in those gray, dark days in Copenhagen. I think it's a good idea just to go indoors, have a coffee and see the exhibition. Thank you for sharing all of that. I think that it was a very interesting conversation about a new way of presenting some of the work being done by an architecture studio. not by a building, not through a building, but through just showing the living organism, the living experiment. So thanks for bringing that.
And thank you for having me.